Welcome to Component 4, which is entitled Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is specifically Unit 8, which has the name Security. In this unit, our objectives include gaining the abilities to list and describe common security concerns, describe safeguards against common security concerns, including firewalls, encryption, virus protection, software and patterns, programming for security, and so on. Describe security concerns for wireless networks and how to address them. List security concerns and regulations that relate to healthcare applications. And finally, describe security safeguards used for healthcare applications. We can't have a discussion about security without mentioning wireless networking. Wireless networks are unsecure by their very nature because typically they're open, allowing anybody to connect. Wireless networks include home networks, hotspots, and hotspots include airports, coffee shops, hotels, citywide wireless access points, college campus environments, hospitals, and so on. Indeed, wireless networks are everywhere in the medical environment because doctors and nurses tend to move from room to room constantly. And they are using wireless communication when that occurs, if they're using devices that are handheld and not connected to a wire. Therefore, wireless security starts with the configuration of a wireless access point, or WAP. An example of a wireless access point is the wireless router that you have in your home. Wireless access points in a corporate environment are much more robust than those we use at home. Some things that we can do to configure our wireless access points for security include changing the default password and configuring the router's SSID. Wireless routers are shipped with default passwords, meaning that anyone can look up the default password for your router on the Internet. SSID is an acronym for the term Service Set Identifier. In other words, it's the name of your wireless network. Further, we should configure the router to not broadcast its SSID, which is a setting in the wireless access point software. If you don't broadcast your router's SSID, it's more difficult, but not impossible, for others to find and then connect to your wireless network. Next, we could require WPA2 authentication. Many of you are familiar with WEP, the Wireless Equivalency Protocol, an older technology that should no longer be used. WPA version 2, and this verbalized is Wireless Protected Access version 2 protection, is a much better choice through which we can restrict access to known devices. We can program MAC addresses into the access point's configuration. All network interface cards, or NICs, have their own address, the MAC or Media Access Control address. Modern wireless access points allow administrators to allow only recorded MAC addresses to authenticate themselves on the web and then communicate wirelessly. Another thing that we can do to improve security on our network is to install a digital certificate on sensitive devices. Therefore, only devices with known and valid certificates can communicate on the network. This type of a setup requires the use of special certificate servers, something not usually found in small offices because of their complexity. Look at the screen and locate the green image on the bottom, showing a partial browser address bar with a valid bank certificate, as shown in Internet Explorer version 8. Starting from the left, you'll see that we're at Umpqua Bank, an Oregon bank, and moving from the left to the right, you'll see the gold lock. If you click the gold lock, you will be able to view the bank certificate. And you can, when you view the bank certificate, view more details, such as, for example, who issued it, how long its dates of validity, and so on. You should try this, communicating with your bank. Open a browser and then look at the screen that appears when you connect to your bank, especially when you navigate to the bank's logon screen. Depending on the browser used, you should see a green address bar and the gold lock. When this happens, we know that the browser validated the bank's certificate with the certificate's issuer, which allows you to access your account. Security with certificates is also a very complex topic. Indeed, I would say that all security topics are complex. That's why most colleges have full security courses. Further, certificates can be used in wired and wireless environments. In many cases, all wireless access points have certificates installed on them, so that the organization determines access points are allowed to authenticate users. Every time that you open a browser and perform online banking, your browser checks your bank's certificate to ensure that it's valid. And again, in Internet Explorer version 7 and 8, the browser address bar turns green when the certificate is valid. If the address bar turns red, the certificate is invalid, and this means that you should close the browser window and not connect to that site. Wireless device security includes smartphones and other portable devices. You might walk around a hospital setting and see nurses and doctors communicating wirelessly using small handheld devices. All portable devices that connect to the network need antivirus protection software installed, each with current antivirus patterns. In fact, you should not use a portable device for sensitive transactions such as banking and viewing medical records unless that device is protected by antivirus software. Further, if you view medical information or perform financial transactions on a portable device and use that device to send or receive email, you should not open email or attachments from unsolicited or unknown sources. As a side note, we should add that even known sources might be virus-infected, meaning that they did not send the email or its attachments to you. This was done by a virus. So exercise caution when using these devices and keep security in mind. Security rules apply to all devices. You probably noticed that as I've walked through this discussion on security, I've made a number of references to healthcare. This is because the U.S. government's stated goal for a number of years now has been that most Americans should have access to electronic health records by the year 2014. This means that a lot of our private and confidential information will be accessible through web browsers and through wireless devices. And if these devices are not secure, then our medical information is at risk. In other words, information could be falsely entered or even changed by somebody with malicious intent. And so it's very important that we understand the application of security in conjunction with healthcare. Why does the government want Americans to use electronic health record systems? Mainly to improve quality of care, decrease cost, and then ensure privacy and security of the data. Now that last part might sound like an oxymoron, but it's not. When we move things online, how can we ensure privacy and security? We should also question the security of outsourcing, where some of the work done in hospitals and banks is being outsourced to countries outside of the United States. Therefore, if hospitals employ medical transcriptionists in countries other than the United States, these countries might have different cultural values and even EHR regulations. How do we protect our data when it is on the other side of the world, being used by folks who live by different rules, regulations, and cultural norms? We must resolve questions such as these as we implement electronic health record use on a wide scale. In addition to the things that I've already mentioned, other things that we should be concerned about when we talk about the security of health data include encountering another person's information in our health record, making the information in both records incorrect. We might be discriminated against in employment, denied employment, or even denied health coverage based on pre-existing conditions if private medical information is made public. Personal privacy might be violated, such as when friends, family, and others find out about an embarrassing but non-infectious medical condition that we face. Finally, we should be concerned about the security of health data because the sharing of data between providers adds risk. Anytime that we use the Internet, we always introduce risk to our data and to our privacy. An electronic health record system is a collection of health data about the business, the patients, doctors, nurses, and all of the entities that are involved in that process. Health data is stored as a record in a database system. For example, each time you visit the doctor, an entry is recorded in your electronic health record, which is stored in a database. Your name and contact information are one record in a database. A blood test, an X-ray, and so on. Each of those represents one record in a database. Therefore, electronic health record systems are used and maintained by healthcare providers and others to store healthcare data. Healthcare providers, healthcare clearinghouses, and health plan providers are subject to federal rules governing security and other rules related to electronic health records. The primary federal rule governing EHRs is known as HIPAA, HIPAA being the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, including its subsequent amendments. Organizations that must adhere to HIPAA rules are called covered entities. Data in EHRs are also subject to HIPAA rules when they are maintained by covered entities. Google Health, a free online electronic personal health record offered by Google, is not a covered entity. Data you enter in Google's health record system are not protected by HIPAA rules. EHRs utilize centralized database systems to integrate patient intake, medical care, pharmacy billing, and so on into one large database system. Departments and other entities might not be in the same physical location, so this means that patient data must travel over the Internet. And any time we combine the Internet with data, we introduce risk. And so you might ask, why does data have to travel over the Internet at all? One reason, and there are many, might be that when a doctor's office bills an insurance company, some of the patient's medical information must travel over the Internet. Lastly, through the use of EHRs, people can view their own health record, taking ownership of its contents, ensuring accuracy, and even providing content by adding comments for their doctors to read. Let's take a moment to consider some electronic health record security questions and answers. How is or how should my data be sent over the Internet? In most cases, your data will be sent in an encrypted, secure manner over the Internet. If it's not, you should question it. Is my data safe? The answer to this question depends on each organization's physical record and network security practices, as promulgated in their security policy. However, we should note that no data is 100% secure against theft or misuse, regardless of the applicable security policy. We can significantly improve our success in obtaining data security by having a good security policy in place and then auditing the things that we do to ensure compliance. And then lastly, who can view my medical records? According to HIPAA, only those who need to know or view the contents of your health record should be able to do so. You must authorize all other access to your record. HIPAA, which again is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, was enacted in 1996 by the U.S. federal government. HIPAA requires that healthcare providers, insurance companies, and employers abide by privacy and security standards. The notes for this slide include a link to Wikipedia's discussion on HIPAA. It's an excellent article, and I suggest you read it. The HIPAA privacy rule requires covered entities to provide patients with what's known as a notice of privacy practices when care is first provided. You might receive this notice when you visit a walk-in clinic, for example. The privacy rule covers paper and electronic private health information. HIPAA also incorporates a security rule, and this goes farther than the privacy rule, in that it covers administrative, physical, and technical data safeguards that must be enacted to secure electronic health record data. All of these should be outlined in the entity's security policy that we mentioned throughout this lesson. At this point in our discussion, it's appropriate to discuss privacy and then compare it to confidentiality. And so, what is privacy? Well, most privacy law revolves around privacy between a person and the government. According to Wikipedia, the law of privacy regulates the type of information that can be collected, and then how this information may be used and stored. And so, if we look at the basic court rulings concerning privacy, we learn that privacy relates to people. Therefore, in the context of our discussion, we take this to mean that the fact that I visited my doctor is nobody's business. This is a private matter. Now, continuing that thought, according to definition, confidentiality is not the same as privacy. According to Wikipedia, Confidentiality is commonly applied to conversations between doctors and patients. Legal protections prevent physicians from revealing certain discussions with patients, even under oath in court. The rule only applies to secrets shared between physician and patient during the course of providing medical care. Therefore, from this definition, we infer that confidentiality relates to data because the communication typically involves data shared between the health provider and the patient. Confidentiality, then, in this context, means that the things discussed with my doctor should remain between me and my doctor. They are confidential. To put privacy and confidentiality in context, one could say that the fact that you visited your doctor is private, and then what you and your doctor discussed is confidential. However, even with such an explanation, we should also note that privacy and confidentiality are not usually exclusive, and each slightly overlaps the other in scope. Therefore, with all of this in mind, what steps can we take to secure an EHR and its records? We can, as we've discussed, authenticate and authorize all access to EHR records. Keep in mind that authorization includes the permissions that we've discussed, including sharing and NTFS permissions when appropriate. Only those with a need to know should view medical records. Only pertinent people can actually make a change to a record. We can limit who can print electronic documents. And finally, all views and changes should be recorded for audit. Examples? A clerk can view the dates and charges related to an office visit, but can't view anything that details the treatment that was received or the information that was discussed between patient and doctor. Or, nurses and doctors can view medical records for patients under their care, but can't view medical records for patients not under their care. Other steps we've discussed include device security. We should apply operating system critical updates immediately. Antivirus definitions should always be current. We restrict physical access to servers that house medical data. And finally, we allow only authenticated device access. We can also secure electronic communications through encryption. All communication between an EHR system and a destination device should be encrypted. We could employ a client-server environment. In this case, we maintain a domain environment with a server that manages all devices and all objects. We can configure user accounts in groups and then provide permissions to groups and implement network access protection mechanisms. For example, if a device attempts to connect to our network, we first examine the device to verify that it has critical updates applied to its operating system, require the device to have antivirus protection software installed, or that its firewall be enabled, and so on. When we consider EHR use via the Internet, we want to implement HTTPS or secure web browsing for all web transactions. In other words, all communication over the Internet is encrypted. Further, we should validate all data entered into web forms before that data is stored in a database. We can perform regular audits of data access and changes in medical records. We can implement redundant devices within our data environment to ensure that devices are available as expected. We can also load balance heavily used hardware devices. For example, rather than using only one server to store database records, we can create a 5-server cluster. Then, whichever server is the least busy can respond to requests for database records. For example, if we maintain an EHR system where doctors and nurses see 500 patients per day, we might want to have more than one database system in place because of the heavy load that will be placed on these systems. We can also prosecute security violations vigorously. If a hacker attacks our network, we should use our records to find out who they are and then report the activity to the authorities. Even internal violations should be prosecuted. This would discourage others from taking the same actions. Lastly, we should maintain regular backups of EHR data and then secure the storage of that data so that it can't be located and used by unauthorized persons or entities.